The theme tonight is heart wisdom. Heart wisdom. So the liberating wisdom of the heart mind. Chitta is a Pali word which has been translated in many different ways. Sometimes as mind, sometimes as heart, sometimes as heart mind, sometimes as conceiving or even consciousness, or even mood or emotion in the texts. So the words derived from the verbal root chitti, which means to cognize or to know. And so there's a lot of division among scholars about how best to translate this word and what it actually means. But essentially, chitta is used in a non-dual way. So it doesn't mean just mind, as in our thoughts and notions and ideas or views and opinions or any kind of intellectual discourse that we might have going on in our head. And it doesn't also just mean heart. It means both. The totality of the heart and mind together. So this is how I'd like you to approach the retreat. With heart and mind. Now for some of you, the phrase freeing the mind will make much more sense and sit with you much better than anything to do with heart. And for others, it'll be the opposite way around. Anything about the heart will sound fabulous, and anything about the head will sound terrible. So it's fine, whichever suits you is okay. But see if you can stretch your preconceived view of one or the other to encompass both. So chitta is the heart mind, and heart wisdom is the liberating wisdom that occurs when we no longer divide reality into me and the world, me and the other, when we just see the truth of things as they are, there's the opportunity for what I call non-dual wisdom to arise. And this is the wisdom of the Buddha Dhamma. So it's a way of being where we're not caught up in our heads overly, we're not caught up in our hearts overly, in an uncomfortable way. We simply rest in awareness. So please let awareness be your refuge on this retreat. Coming over and over to awareness itself. So rather than let the focus be what the awareness reveals, the object of the awareness, just see if you can rest in the awareness. And when we start to do that, we start to discover that when we're just with our direct experience, in a rather intuitive way, when we rest in our intuitive awareness, being with all of our experiences, whatever they are, then there's a natural process that follows, and that just occurs rather effortlessly. So that's the invitation, to let awareness be your refuge, resting in it for the retreat. So as you walk, be aware. As you sit, as you eat, as you have a shower in the morning, as you sit here, as you listen. So really listening deeply, not only to what is being said verbally, but also in another way, to your own responses, and also to what is not being said. So listening to the profound silence. So there's words, there's listening, there's your responses to them, and there's also a very deep and vast silence that contains all sound, that is a precious and wonderful quality. And as you deepen into the silence over the days, you'll recognize that the silence actually reveals many things. And so I just invite you to trust your own capacity to be aware. And when you notice that you've forgotten to be aware and you haven't been aware for 5 minutes, please don't berate yourself and start telling yourself you're a terrible meditator, but rather just bring very gently the attention back to resting in the awareness. Awareness doesn't go anywhere. Awareness is always available. We can always come to it. It's indestructible. As we start to trust this process and just be with our feeling world, our world of thoughts, our world of sensations, we notice the shifting, changing nature of reality. We notice what arises. We notice what stays. And we also notice what ceases, what ends. And although this sounds incredibly simple and we can intellectually understand it, when we actually know it in the body, when we know it fully, when we directly experience it, it's a rather precious experience that has the capacity to illuminate life. It reveals something about life. It shows us something we perhaps have not seen before. Or we may have seen before, but we've become very busy and swept along with the tide of our life. And we've forgotten to just come home, to come back to resting in the preciousness of awareness. To do this, we start to see that any idea we have of ourselves is actually transitory, shifting, changing, elusive, not fixed. In fact, the entire idea of self can be seen as a mental formation, a construct. So first of all, just see for yourself. Be with your experience and see what the awareness reveals. Nisargadatta Maharaj, one of the great Advaita teachers of India, some of you here may have met him, said, "The mind creates the abyss, the heart crosses it." The mind creates the abyss, so the divide, the heart crosses it. And sometimes I think that is really true, that with our mind we create and construct the division between ourselves and another. When we cling to and the I rests in the mental formations, in the world of thought, and we use the mind to put together a particular view or an idea. And then we hold to it, then that becomes problematic and leads to our suffering. So we need to see for ourselves and start to understand this process. And mostly the sense of I lands in a particular identity. And one of the really common areas for the sense of I to land is, and stick to, is in the work that we do, or the role that we have in life, the job that we have. And I want to tell you a little story. I was, as usual, I was having a coffee with a friend in my favourite coffee shop. And a woman I know who's a scientist and a writer said to me, "Oh, Radha, I want to tell you a really silly story." Now, I actually didn't think it was silly at all. I thought it was really quite profound and precious because it points further than the actual story itself. She said she had, and it's a winter story. It's actually winter in Australia. When I left Australia, I had, I did have boots on, but I thought I shouldn't bring them here, so I left them home and had very cold feet on the plane. But I left with jeans and a jumper and a woolen jacket and lots of warm clothes because it's midwinter. So this is a winter story, forgive me. So my friend said, "Oh, I hurt my ribs carrying firewood to light my fire to warm my house." Her particular house is on quite a steep hill, and she's over 60 years old, and so she had really hurt her ribs carrying the wood uphill to her house and trying to keep warm. So she decided to go to her osteopath, her friend whom she'd known before and she'd been to when she'd had difficulties with the body. So off she went and she began a conversation with him about how to use her body more constructively so that she wouldn't injure herself, and they were having a rather analytical conversation about this. An excellent conversation. But then the osteopath did something really different. He said, "Oh, firewood." And then he said, "Oh, I've got a lot of wood on my property that I don't need. I'll bring it to you on the weekend." So on the weekend, he came with a big load of firewood for his patient. And he brought one of his sons, and they chopped it all up, and then they carried it up the hill for her so that she would no longer have to walk up the steep hill carrying the firewood. Now, that might seem like a really, really simple story, but actually, it's rather important, because what he did was he dropped his conventional role and saw that there was something he could do about the situation. And so he used his generosity of spirit and heart to actually do something that was quite precious to somebody else and really, really helpful, and something she very much needed. The wood, of course, symbolizes warmth and care. Carrying wood's an everyday activity. But the practical solution he came to was an expression of heart wisdom. He dropped all usual ideas of how an osteopath should behave with his patient and said, "Okay, this is what I'll do. This is what I'll do to help. This is what's required." And I actually found it a rather generous and beautiful thing. My friend was moved to tears by the kindness. She said, "How incredibly kind that he would do that for me." And I think I was particularly touched by the story. because someone had been incredibly kind to me in very much the same way. When my little grandson died, which was in 2004, a long time ago, I know, but we don't forget these things. When my little baby grandson died from cancer, a friend of mine, Cass, she rang me and she said, "I've got a gift for you. I'm sending you a gift." And I said, "Okay, what is it?" And she said, "It's an unusual gift." She said, "It's a trailer load of firewood." She said, "I cannot do anything to help you in your grief. I cannot do anything to change your loss. But what I can do is send you some firewood to keep you warm in your grief." So this was, again, just a precious movement of the heart, a generous and wise and very sweet offering, something very simple, something very considerate. So as I burned my friend's firewood all winter, I felt loved, I felt incredibly cared for and nourished and nurtured by her. And what a sweet and beautiful gesture. So this is heart wisdom. It's wisdom that comes from letting go. It's wisdom that comes from generosity. It's wisdom that comes from compassion and care for another. So these are just examples of how we might move beyond our restrictions in life. In consciousness, we form all kinds of unnecessary barriers. We see differences in gender, in race, in ideology, in political ideas, in culture, in origin, religion, In Australia, for example, we say, this is our country and you can't come here to refugees. I think it's appalling, and so do many other people. But this is an example of where the mind fixes upon an idea. Or the politicians who are running the country fix upon an idea. And it creates barriers and divisions and prevents us from seeing and knowing and understanding the humanity of the other. And our meditation practice is to see beyond that division, to see and really know for ourselves that when we let go and we see in a different way, we see that which is not about me and you being different, but rather we see our humanity. We see that which is unbound. We see that which is not different. So our practice, when we go rather deeply and we start to let go, shows us our stuck places, reveals to us when we're getting caught up in the mind, when we're getting caught up in our particular views and opinions. It shows us when we see others as less than ourselves. And in the Dharma teachings, one of the very first qualities that in India they're called the Indriyas, or the gods of the mind, one of those first qualities is Shraddha, which is faith or trust. So we begin our retreat just starting to trust ourselves, trusting ourselves to be with life, trusting our capacity to be with our own experience. And when we trust that, we become more confident. More confident in our capacity just to let go, little by little by little. To soften, as Leela said before. To soften those stuck places, to soften those harsh views. And then from that can come enormous generosity of spirit, kindness to others. And of course, the kindness also includes how we relate to ourselves. And so I'd like you, during the retreat, to act with that generosity of spirit, both towards yourself and towards others. See if you can bring a softness and a fineness to the quality of attention, because the trust is actually a movement of the heart. It is to rest in the awareness and to just trust our own experience and that very natural revealing that happens once we start to see with sensitivity. And then actually the whole world looks different. Once we start to see in this way, peace opens up. And we no longer see ourselves as separate, isolated, or alienated. So as we start to let go of taking a fixed position, we start to see more deeply. And these are the words of Ajahn Buddhadasa, a great teacher of emptiness from Thailand. He says, the point is that the world is empty of any self or of anything belonging to a self, as Jonathan pointed out earlier. There's nothing that can be taken as being a self or belonging to a self. I'll read the last sentence again. There is nothing that can be taken as being a self or belonging to a self. Self cannot be found in anything, not in mind, matter, nor in anything that arises out of mind and matter. So when we start to rest in awareness, we start to see the insubstantial nature of self. And we start to understand and know that there's a way of being in the world where the wisdom of the heart can shape our life. And when the wisdom of the heart shapes our life, suffering ends, our anguish ends. Let's just sit quietly for a moment or two. May all beings rest in awareness. May all beings explore the wisdom of the heart. And may all beings act with generosity of spirit. Thank you for listening. So the next thing on the program is walking meditation. Now, walking meditation is one of my absolute favorite postures. And it's become an even more favorite posture lately. Because when I was here in Israel two years ago, I actually fractured my femur. Some of you might have already noticed I'm walking and sitting slightly awkwardly. I had a broken leg and didn't know it. So it happened that I taught the entire time in Israel in 2014 with a fractured femur. And since then I was on crutches for almost a year and a half. So I'm only just recovering. So walking meditation is extraordinary, not being able to walk for a year and a half, and it's extraordinary anyway. And I love to give the instructions. So, I can walk, so I'll show you. So you just need a small section to walk up and down. Now, you just start with the feet like this, and the hands can be here or here, wherever it is comfortable. So looking down so that you don't trip over something. And then, first of all, placing the attention in the feet and the contact of the feet with the floor or the ground. And so as you walk, just stepping like so. And then, so you're walking like this. It doesn't have to be super, super slow. Then you get to the end and then you just turn around. And guess what? You walk back the other way. Okay. You might say, what's the point of that? The point is to fully experience what it is to do something as simple as just walk. So, first of all, we feel the sensations in the feet. And then when we can do that with each step, we start to feel or expand the awareness to the rest of the body. And then we walk feeling the totality of the whole body. And then we start to expand the awareness so that as we walk in an incredibly connected way, so that we feel, it's much easier to walk like this, so that we feel that I don't even end here, but I can feel connected to all things everywhere.
This is what is so precious about walking. It's actually not so hard to have quite expansive and profound experiences walking. So you walk and you listen to the birds. And if you are really, really sensitive, it's as if the bird sings from your own heart, and you're not separate from the bird, or the leaf, or the tree. So, walking up and down, up and down. It will also be that sometimes, when you try to walk, you have lots of thoughts. In fact, I promise you that will happen at some point. And so you just notice that you're thinking, and bring the attention back to the feet as you walk. And you can feel each footfall. Boom. I walked in France on the Yatra, the pilgrimage, in I think 2006 or something, and we walked for 2 weeks. And I could get up in the morning, get out of my tent, and the second I put my foot on the floor, on the ground, there was enormous bliss and sensitivity that would just rush through the body. So it's a rather easy way, actually, to develop what's called samadhi, to develop some focus or concentration, which will be accompanied by quite wonderful energy through the body. So, and there's a great tradition of pilgrimage all over India and Asia. You'll see the monks doing their alms rounds in the morning with their bowls. You know, this is another kind of pilgrimage. They go out in the misty morning and collect food. And it's a rather beautiful practice. And we can have all kinds of insights, all kinds of experiences of expanded consciousness, all kinds of feelings of being connected to this very earth, of feeling ourselves as part of the whole of life rather than as this discrete, separate, funny pink thing called a body. So explore, see for yourself. It's a wonderful, wonderful practice. And it is just as important and as vital as the sitting practice. And if you haven't been able to walk for a while, like me, it is divine. It is totally divine to be able to walk. The first time I could walk on the beach, there's where I live, I live about 10 minutes from the most spectacular beach, I think, on earth. And I can walk for, I can walk for 2 hours along it easily without, you know, seeing maybe 3 or 4 people. It's wonderful. And the first time I could walk on the beach after a year and a half of not being able to walk, it was heaven sent and complete bliss. So please walk as if that had happened to you. Please recognize and realize that every step is precious. It is. So that's how we do walking meditation. And so you can find yourself a little place outside to walk up and down. Or if it's really hot during the day, we'll find a room for you to walk in. Don't walk in the hot sun, because your head can get really hot walking up and down outside, especially in the middle of the day.